And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom and welcome to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network. That's thelandofisrael.com. Ari Abramowitz here with Jeremy Gimpel. And what are we talking about today? I'll tell you what I want to talk about today. Jews and dogs. Why? Because I have a dog now. I'm living on this lone mountain, on the lone hilltop in Judea, and I got a dog. And let me tell you, Jeremy, you're looking at me like, where are you going with this?
I'm just saying, like, whoever was listening is like, Jews and dogs, I'm not listening.
No, I think they're all listening right now, because everybody knows. Remember what Phil Collins, that guy, said in his concert? All Jews and dogs, get out of my concert. I was like, why Jews and dogs? I now see, because there's a thing with Jews and dogs.
We love dogs.
Well, we love, my grandmother told me that Jews do not own dogs. It's not something we do. The dogs are meant to hunt down Jews.
Did she really say that?
Yeah. She did. And I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Jewish great-grandmothers and grandmothers who say that. I mean, I've heard stories that they were like escaping from Romania when she's a little kid and there's dogs running after.
What's just so funny about the entire Abramowitz family is whatever their personal desires are becomes the desires of the Jewish people.
Of the Jewish people. That's also right. My father always loved burnt meat. Jews like burnt meat. Gentiles like it rare. And then I mean my uncle who likes it rare. I'm like, what is he, a Gentile? Jews like it really cold. My father liked air conditioning cold. Jews like it cold. Gentiles like it warm. And it was always like a bad thing. You know, like, we're not Gentiles. We don't like it warm in the house. So it's like Jews. That's what my grandmother said. And also growing up, dogs were just like, who would want a dog? Every time I saw a friend with a dog, the dog was like, ruff, 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 ruff. Like, who would want that in their face? What I wasn't told was that that's how they are when they're being territorial and you come into their territory. But to their owners, they're not like that. They're not like that at all.
I was born with dogs, raised with dogs. I've had dogs my whole life. I love dogs. And it always bothered me that you didn't like dogs, because how could you not like a kelev, one who is like a heart?
Right. So I'll just say I didn't get it. Okay. But I got this dog. There was a family in Modi'in where my sister lives that was telling them they have this dog and their kids love it and they love the dog and they're connecting with the dog. But they're in Modi'in in a big city and the dog, it's a big dog and it wants to get out, and they just see that it's not the right thing for the dog, and they heard that we live in this place and with this farm and the dog could run. He came out and they're like, okay, this is a good home for the dog. So the dog came out, and for me it was a business deal. Okay, that's why I wanted a dog. I was like, this dog is going to give me 5 seconds to put a bullet in the chamber if I need to. That's what the purpose of the dog is, that if I hear someone coming, I can then be prepared.
Well, you know, just a couple of days ago.
Yesterday.
Oh, was it yesterday?
Yesterday in Hebron. That's exactly what it's for. That there was a father, mother, and their daughter. They were at home, and a terrorist came up and it was to stab, and I think he even stabbed the father.
He hurt the father,
but the dog came and it jumped at him and attacked him and gave the father time to take out his gun and shoot the Arab and kill him and shoot the terrorist. And that's what happened. And that's what this dog is for. And I remember when Halel Ariel, Zichron Ali Vracha, may her memory be a blessing, when she was killed, you sat down with the father. You remember this? And you offered to...
I actually got him a dog.
You offered to get him a dog, and it was so painful because he said, you know, that Halel had been asking for that for about a month beforehand.
Yeah.
So painful. So anyway, so I got this dog, and now I, like, love it. I love this thing. I mean, it's just like, it has a personality. It's so happy to see me when it hasn't seen me. I know it's like it just wants the food, and it sees me as, like, food and drink and whatever. I don't care.
That's not true. It's not just about the food and the drink. It actually likes you. You're his master.
Okay.
It's like a man's best friend. That's what dogs are. I feel like people are listening to this show, Ari, and they're like, Ari only now understands what a dog is. Like, every little boy knows what a dog is. And now you're like, oh my gosh, the dog likes me. Yeah, dogs love their masters. That's why people have dogs. Think about a farm. There's cows make milk, and chickens make eggs. What is the dog's job really? The dog's job is just to like jump and be excited when the farmer comes.
No.
And then
it's
also, that's what the farmer loves the dog.
We have sheep. When I take the sheep out, the dogs make sure that the sheep don't stray. The dogs keep the... You don't know what it is to be a shepherd. Someday you'll understand.
Oh, thank you. Very nice.
Someday you'll understand.
Yeah, one day.
Are you signing up for a shepherding course?
I've already signed up. Not really, but I'm going to as soon as registry. As soon as the registry is open, I will be signing up.
I'm ahead of you already.
How about this? Do you know what the website is? I know what the website is.
I know what the guy's phone number is.
No, you don't. It's the guy's government agency. There's no phone number.
I'm going to a private.
I am the
private
shepherd
shepherding
before
school.
You cannot
I'm going
go.
To private shepherding
There's
school.
There's no private shepherding school in Israel. I am the shepherd. You are the city slicker from Texas.
But listen, I'm really happy that you have adopted the keffiyeh headdress that I put on that I recommended, and now you wear it around. That's really, really cool. And I've also sort of started wearing this Bukharian type of kippah.
Yeah, I see that. You're wearing it right now.
Am I?
Yeah, you are.
Oh, I am. That's true.
Yeah.
Anyways,
why are you wearing that?
You know what? I wore it when I was a kid until I'm like 8. A lot of little Jewish kids wear this.
Yeah, because they're big.
They're big. It stays on the head. You don't need clips. It doesn't bother you. You just wear it. And it's like a cute kippah to wear. It covers the whole head. And I like it.
Yeah, it makes you look different than everyone else around you.
Does it? I just like the feeling of it. I feel like it feels right.
I'll tell you what it is. It's the same thing.
But I'm not as sticky as you are when it comes to like what I wear.
Yeah, love walking around with my biblical bandana. I love that thing because you walk around with that and people know that you are not like them. It's like I'm not modern Orthodox and I'm not just like another religious Zionist person. Something when you wear a Bukharian kippah like you're wearing, you're like,
you see what strikes me about
often,
you is
I just want to say something very okay. often the kippah, it's like a sad reality, but the kippah on your head almost puts you in a specific box in Israeli and Jewish society.
I was
society.
Talking to someone about that. I'm like, yeah, and they said, what's this? And I was able to like literally every kippah, depending on the shape of it, the size of it, the color scheme, you can really
put people in a box. And so you wear that kind of kippah, it's like, well, what is that on your head? Are you Bukharian? So clearly you're sort of out of a box of whatever box anyone would want to put you in.
Yeah, but think about last week when the Hayovel group came to, you know, you put out that video. Thank you for doing that, by the way. It was such a magical evening. And sometimes I feel like
the world needed to see that.
To document that, it pulls me out a little bit. So I realize there's some self-sacrifice involved in doing that. But I'm really happy you did. It was a great video, even though it didn't get the really powerful, heart-moving things that I shared. But, you know, it got some of the mediocre things that you shared, which are really, it was very moving. But it happened to be that it was a cold night, and I was wearing this strimal. Remember, like, the ultra-Orthodox wore them from, like, 12th century Poland?
Yeah, you bought it in the Ukraine.
I bought it in the Ukraine. I normally wouldn't buy it in the Ukraine, but it was, like, really fine, fine quality, and it was,
but people
$8.
In the Ukraine wear it because it really keeps your head warm.
It keeps your head really warm. Yeah. So here you were wearing, like, this biblical bandana around your head, and I'm wearing a strimal from Poland and from the Ukraine. Okay, so that's Jews and dogs done. Let's move on to Trump.
Well, you spoke about this overnight with Hayovel, and I feel like that needs to at least be addressed.
Address it.
Okay, so our center is officially up and running now. Our Beit Midrash, our study center, doesn't even have walls yet. It just has the concrete pillars and a roof over it, and we're still building our center, and yet still the center actually had its first inaugural night, an overnight where people came with sleeping bags. They pitched bunk beds, military bunk beds that were like assembled that evening. We barbecued out. We brought out a Yitzhak Meir who helped us with the music around the bonfire. Ari was teaching Torah. I was telling stories. We were sitting on the ground underneath the stars of Israel, surrounded by this bonfire in the magical hills of Judea. And it felt prophetic. It felt biblical. It felt historic. It felt like no one has ever done such a thing because obviously everyone that's around that bonfire, the one thing because there are probably 50 different theologies around that bonfire. So many different people from so many different backgrounds, Jews, non-Jews, different versions of Christian, different versions of Noahide, different Jews were there. I don't even know what it was. It was like a big amalgam of realities. But the one thing that kind of united all of us was we were all Mevakshei Hashem. We were all seekers of God. We're all trying.
You know, I saw you wrote that to our little partnership circle when he was like, oh, the Goyim and the non-Jews and what's going on. Just they were just trying to make sense of it. And you defined it as Mevakshei Hashem. And that's really a great definition.
Yeah, seekers of God. And that, you know, the you know, because there's so many Jewish sources that encourage Jews to remove themselves from the non-Jewish world. And understandably, look at the non-Jewish world. It's filled with MTV and poison and People magazine and materialism and the wrong values. And there's just a lot of demonic, evil, poisonous things in the non-Jewish world. It's the non-Jewish world. In the world, 99.9% of the world are non-Jews. In that world of today, it's a very broken world. And so Jews from throughout the sages of Israel were encouraged to like just try to remove yourself from that world as much as possible. And so one of our friends sent me this ancient quote from like the 1700s. And it says pretty much stay away from the non-Jewish world because there's a big danger that you will be sucked into their culture, into their ideologies, be influenced by them. But it says specifically, Akum, the Ovdei Kochavim, stay away from them, stay away from the idolaters, from the heathens. And I wrote back to him saying that the people that come to us, that are listening to our network, they're not idolaters, they're not heathens, they are God-fearers, they're God-seekers, and we may not all agree on everything to the details of the theology, but we are all on a journey seeking after God, and it's not fair to include them in the 99% of the world.
That's true, but on the other hand, we do this past week, I have met a few monks that are Catholics.
They are actually idolaters.
By the definition, I wouldn't want to insult them and say they're idolaters, but by our definition of idolaters, they are worshipers of idol, there's an idolatry there. Okay?
Right. I mean, they actually came when they had like the huge crucifix.
They had huge crucifixes,
yeah,
but let me tell you, I love them.
Yeah.
I do. I'm sorry. I do. They are humble people. They're kind people. They're curious. They want to learn.
Well, that's what I was saying.
You know, so like, I feel like that quote that you read really did apply when the Jews are in the exile.
Yeah.
But now that we're back home, we have a responsibility to the world.
Right.
We can now assume our position as the nation of Israel united in our land to be a light unto the nations. We don't need to be reactive and reflexive and scared anymore.
Well, just here's what it did for me. I was looking around the fire, and Ishai Fleischer was there, and I don't even know how.
Yitzhak Meir was there,
and we were there, and then all these like holy non-Jews were there, and although like there's like obviously like theological, religious differences, cultural differences, language barriers, there's like so much that's going on there, and yet still in humility, to put all that aside, and to come together and learn Torah, and to come together and sing and chant Hebrew songs under the stars of Israel. There's something more powerful that we're not all on the same page. There's something marvelous about the fact that we can be different and united in this pursuit after the one true God.
So yeah, there's so many magical things that happened that night. And you know, sometimes when something magnificent is launched in the world, there's some sort of divine guidance that makes it really dramatic and memorable. And it felt like a memorable night. Also from just the fact that the home that I'm living in on that hilltop, we took out all the sofas. And how many people did I have sleeping in there? Or there are like 10, 11 people sleeping in the living room. And they went down and slept in the cave. And they were sleeping all over the place on this winter night. It was really powerful. And there was a kid from America that's here in Israel for the year in yeshiva. And I got this text message, and I'm moved to play it on the show. Just listen.
In the past couple of days, I've been listening to a lot of your stuff. My brother actually met you a couple weeks ago, Zach Frisch. He goes to Shalvim. And then my dad is also a big listener. He listens to you guys a lot. And he's like, he gave me this idea. He's like, Josh, you need to listen to this podcast. And I'm like, all right, why not? And I listened to it, and it just like, it hit me, and I heard you, and it kept going on. I kept like listening after one after the other, and just I felt like there's so many things I can be doing in this world, and then an opportunity like this to go help build a yeshuv and help build a community. It just to be part of something like that, it's a big thing, and I'd love to come by sometime and see what you guys are doing.
And he was there, and he was lit up, and everyone there was lit up. And that's why I think a lot of the arguments that are being made today in the media for Israel, they're way too cerebral, way too intellectual. This kid left on fire. This is an emotional thing. This is an experiential thing.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what strikes me the most about him is that, you know, he's like a Jew that just made Aliyah or is in the process of making Aliyah. He's a young guy. And he's like, listen, I have experience in carpentry. My father works in construction. I want to do whatever I can to help. And then we have a guy coming tomorrow from Holland. And next week, the people are coming from Hungary. And we have people that are coming from, these one-year programs, Jews from Israel. And we have Mechina kids that are before they're going to the IDF. They're coming. And everyone here is just giving of themselves to this place, just as we have. And literally, Kol Ish Asher Yidvenu Libo. That is this week's Torah portion, the Torah portion of Truma, where each man is not just to give, but he's to give as much as his heart desires. It's not that he's meant to give a specific amount. There's also a half a shekel that everyone had to give. But this is an opportunity when you kind of want to build something larger than yourself. There is a place to give, if it's rather in money, in action, in a skill that you have. And it's marvelous to give of yourself to a higher reality. And I think that I was walking around our headquarters just a couple of days ago, and our dream of all dreams is, of course, that it be a place of Torah and a place of light and a place of Kiddushah, a place of holiness. But I also, and we all want it to also be someplace that's very organic and holistic, someplace that doesn't take from nature, but rather lives in harmony with nature, that would even give back to nature, to create a fully self-sustaining, self-reliant reality that could be replicated anywhere in the world. Because if we can do this in the mountains, in the desert, we would be able to do this anywhere in the world. How can we literally return to the oneness that we once experienced with this land? Because Adam is called Adam. Humans are called Adam because we were from the Adama. We were from the earth. We maintained our identity as a part of this earth, as an expression of this earth. And as I'm walking around thinking about how we could make this farm all, you know, recycle and organic and solar energy, and I was thinking that to believe in the oneness of God in some ways is really to believe that you're a part of a larger reality, or that you're a part of one larger organism, that somehow all of us are not separate entities in our own individual narratives, and we are all living in our own individual lives, but that our individual lives are somehow connected to a much larger web, a much larger field, and all of us are part and connected to this larger reality. That, I think, is a key element of believing in the oneness of God. Not just that there's one God up in heaven and there's not five gods up in heaven, but rather that we are a part of a oneness that should be living organically, holistically connected to the planet itself, with each other, to live in harmony together. And when we're living in harmony with the world around us, because we are a part of the world around us, it truly is what's best for us as individuals. So what's best for us as individuals is what's best for the whole, and what's best for the whole is what's best for the individuals. A Jewish God consciousness, a Torah God consciousness, is to really connect us to a reality that's higher than ourselves. And that's why the Torah portion, as they're building the Mishkan, the tabernacle, the place where everyone then transcends their own personal realities in order to create a higher reality, that's in our own small way. This is like our own little tabernacle, where people that feel connected to this place are giving of their hearts in whatever way that they can. And I think it's just beautiful.
Yeah, I want to get to Trump, because I know there's a lot of things going on around America, around the world, that are very relevant and current. I want to talk about them, but I just want to share one last story on that subject. And that's the story of Eberhard Christoph. I love this story because it was about 2 weeks ago now, and it was whipping, freezing rain. I was sick in the apartment. I had just gotten air conditioning in there, so I wasn't shivering cold in there, and I get a knock on my door, which is just not something that happens, you know? Like, nobody just knocks on my door. It's like alone, a studio home on a hilltop that there's nothing around anywhere. That just doesn't happen. And who was this man that was knocking on my door in the whipping, freezing rain? nearly 70 years old. His name is Eberhard Christoph. He's from Germany, and he was one of the volunteers. I wasn't there. I was on speaking tour, but you said he was one of the volunteers that helped to further the building of the left wing.
That's correct. He was actually one of the more important volunteers in that he helped translate my English into German.
Right. So he told me his name is Eberhard. I invited him in. He said, no, I'm not here to bother him. Like, you're going to come in now because it's freezing cold, whipping rain outside, and you have nothing but a briefcase in your hand. And he's like, no, I came here. I want to sleep in that structure. My heart has not been leaving me alone about this. I want to go there. I want to spend 2 days there fasting and praying in that structure that he helped to build. I said, there's no windows. There's no nothing protecting you. There's no doors. It's just freezing, whipping rain. He's like, this is really what I want to do. I said, please, at least let me make you a cup of tea. So I'm talking to him, and he tells me about his life and his name, which is Eberhard, which is it means a cowboy of pigs.
A pig herder.
A pig herder. Yeah, he told me, quote, unquote, cowboy of pigs. That's not my own commentary on it.
Cowboy is with cows. He's like a pig guy.
Okay, take it up with Eberhard. Okay, this is what he said, and
so he's a German pig herder.
No, he's not a pig herder. That's what his name
but
means.
But just imagine what that would look like to a Jew. This guy was like a descendant of the Reich, a German pig herder.
Okay, and do you know who?
And now he's fasting in our Torah center.
Do you know who is?
If people don't hear that and think Mashiach is coming, you have another thing coming. Mashiach must be coming.
Okay, good point. His name is Eberhard, and he is a pig. That means pig. I just said he is a pig. Can we move on? Anyways, so he goes, and he's fast. And I said, do you have anything to keep warm? He's like, yeah, in here, in his briefcase. I mean, you don't know how freezing, like pebbles of frozen ice are shooting out of the sky. And so I said, no, you're going to at least take this sleeping bag. Here's a key to my place. If it gets too cold for you, it's not a defeat. Okay, just come. There's a beautiful couch here. I can put you in the bed, whatever you want. But no, he went. You came over that last night. We went out in the freezing rain to bring him like a pop-up army bed,
yeah,
a cot. We wanted to bring him more, but we figured he would just say no to that. It's too pampering of him. And he was there for those days. And there's something really beautiful about that. Yeah. You know, that it's only beautiful to Hashem when it comes from your heart. That's what Islam doesn't get. They want the whole jihad against the world. The world needs to be submitted to Sharia law. What God is going to take any pleasure in a world submitted by coercion of death to Sharia law? It's not a beautiful thing. It has to be nadiv libo. It has to be from the kindness of your heart.
Can I explain something about this? This is really, that's like deep, deep on my heart. That a lot of our more fundamentalist kind of listeners, they hate the fact that Jews like the idea of evolution. They say, what? The Bible says X, Y, and Z. It's that, period. 6 days is 6 days. That's what it says. Even though the sun was only created on the fourth day, and those first days were 24 hours. Like, meaning they just are very, very literalist, and they hate the idea of evolution. And Jews, the idea of evolution is so attractive to us. We love the idea of evolution. It almost...
Me,
Jeremy.
Okay.
Jeremy, Rav Daniel. Me and Rav Daniel. We love the idea of evolution.
You're like my dad. What you love, it's like, Jews, we...
So we, the more mystical sides of Judaism, the Hasidut of Judaism, the deeper sides of Judaism, I think, point towards a world that is evolving. And you can also just look at the reality, like the human consciousness is evolving. And the Torah as a spiritual map is kind of guiding us towards that. It's interesting because the Torah was given while we were in the desert. And we have all the stories of Genesis and all the stories of Exodus, and we have Vayikra, Leviticus, and we have Numbers. Only in the book of Devarim, in the book of Deuteronomy, which is Moses' final speech, after 40 years in the desert, that means that there were Jews that were slaves. They were 20 years old. Then they had kids, another 20 years old. That's at least two generations that were like lived in the desert and that were born in the desert. And now they're standing right before they go into Eretz Yisrael. And Moses gives this speech. Only then does it ever talk about God's love. Never before that. Also, tshuva. It's not mentioned before that. It's interesting that there is an evolution of our understanding of the Torah, because the people at that time, in their slave mentality, were simply not ready. They were not evolved enough in their spiritual journey. in order to receive God's love. They just could not comprehend that yet. Therefore, Moses is as a guide, guiding them towards this understanding. And I feel as though radical Islam is simply an unevolved understanding, that our job is to bring that consciousness to them, that God is a God of love, not a God of submission. It's not that there's no hope for them. They are simply not yet enlightened. They're not yet, they don't know who the true identity of God. They think they're worshiping the God of Israel, but in reality, they're worshiping one aspect of God. They've taken the name Elohim, the name of God's judgment, and they say, that is who God is. God is Allah. It almost sounds like Elohim. And what is that? It's, if you steal, we're going to cut off your arms. If you're not like us, we're going to submit you, kill you, jihad against you. And then on the other side of the world, there's, you know, there's like this like kind of Catholic Christian thing that took the other name of God, Yud Heh and Vav Heh, which is ultimate mercy, where it says, don't worry, do whatever you want. The Torah is totally irrelevant. Anything you want, God will forgive. God is ultimate love, ultimate mercy. The Torah is no longer love, 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 mercy, mercy, mercy. And they took
crusades, sort of, inquisitions,
you know, in the name of God's love and mercy. Meaning, maybe even then, meaning, so we can see that there's an evolution even within that world of kind of coming out of something. And so I think that the Torah shows us that humanity, if the Torah is a spiritual map, is going through a evolution of consciousness. And the fact that we're dealing with this dark region in the Middle East of people that want to submit everyone to God's authority. Yes, God has a place as the authority, but he also has the place as our Father in heaven. And this kind of, hopefully, the Torah that will be going out to Zion, not just to the Western world, but also to the Middle Eastern world, will teach the true identity of Hashem, that he has many names and many aspects, but in reality, he is a God of love and compassion and peace.
Yeah, so I want to shift gears for a little bit. It's not a total shift of gears, but I want to talk about what's going on in America right now, because it seems like history is speeding up a little bit. Things happen really, really fast. Would you believe me if I told you that it's been 40 days that President Donald Trump has been president of the United States?
Yeah.
That is, yeah, it does, because a lot of people feel like it's felt like a lot longer. He's definitely a doer, okay? Yeah. He is definitely a doer.
Lots going on.
Lots going on.
I'll tell you what I like about him. I like the fact that he's made payroll. Most politicians have never had to actually have a job where you have employees and you need to like build a company. But like, what was Barack Obama? A community organizer? Even all these other politicians, they're just politicians. He actually had businesses that failed, businesses that succeeded. And so someone that is like that is, in their very essence, a doer. He's probably done more in these 40 days than some presidents do in 4 years.
That's true. And a lot has been happening also. There's been a sharp rise in anti-Semitism in America. And, you know, I gotta say, Jews sometimes seem like they're very smart, but other times really seem to get it wrong. And a lot of Jews are saying it's because of Donald Trump, that he's an anti-Semite. And there's a difference between something being correlative and causative. Yes, there is a correlation between the rise of anti-Semitism and Donald Trump being president. But that doesn't mean it's causative. It doesn't mean that he is causing it just because there's a correlation. There's a lot of different factors at play here that could be causing this. But I want to play a little clip here. They were interviewing, I don't want to play the whole video, these grandchildren of Holocaust survivors about what their thoughts are about Trump. And one kid said this.
I think all these seeds exist throughout history. You know, vilifying the Jewish people is a common thread way back. It's why we celebrate Passover, right? The thing that really makes me afraid is I got a phone call from my grandma not long ago, and she was crying. And she said, David, this is exactly how it happened last time, and I'm afraid it's going to happen again.
Did you hear that? He said that she said, this is how it happened last time, and it's going to happen again. As if Donald Trump is Adolf Hitler rising to power. Totally missing the picture there. First of all, you have anything to say here?
Yeah, I had a lot to say here, but I want to hear your point first. I have so much to say here that if you look at the articles of the rising of anti-Semitism, a lot of them, the source that everyone is quoting, they're quoting the same source. And the source of these anti-Semitic things are from the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, which is, might as well just be the Jewish lobby for the Democratic Party. And so they want to create a reality that Trump is anti-Jewish in order to continue to sway Jewish voters to the Democratic Party. And I want people to know, and people are seeing swastikas on all these cemeteries that are being vandalized. Muslims use swastikas all the time. People are trying to point this to some neo-Nazi, alt-right anti-Semitism. Folks, these anti-Semitic texts, it's most likely not alt-rights. It's most likely Muslims that use swastikas because the Grand Mufti and Hitler were best friends. And swastikas and Muslims, go look at any parade. You'll see swastikas all
Let's
over parades.
Let's not fool yourself, though. There's also an alt-right element to it as well. We don't know that it's Muslims. That's total speculation. But let me tell you, if it's alt-right, that doesn't mean it's because the Trump is alt-right. It doesn't mean that. What could it mean? There's a principle that I've seen to be true in my life and true in the world. Whatever you resist persists. And why is that? Because you're putting so much energy and focus. And a lot of these Jewish groups that are blowing anti-Semitism whistles and alt-right and pointing the microphone and the camera at real Jew haters like Richard Spencer and the Daily Stormer, I guarantee you their websites, web hits have gone through the roof since Trump has been in office, not because Trump is a Jew hater, but because of all the whistleblowing and the pointing of the fingers and people are going. And there are, and when you listen to these anti-Semitic rhetoric, what is this propaganda about? What is this hate about? There's little bits of truth and then magnified amounts of extreme falsehood. But people say, wow, that's true. These Jewish Hollywood liberals, anti-religion, that's true because there is a Sarah Silverman out there and there are these anti-Hollywood liberals. Well, now that's how Jews are, and they're against Judaism, and they're against religion, and they're against God, bringing it to a falsehood. So I think that that is one reason that there's a tremendous amount of Jew hatred going on, because I don't think it's just Muslims. I think there is something, there's a groundswell. And I just got an email about my last speaking tour, because my last speaking tour, I went around, and you remember, Jeremy, I mean, it was a speaking tour that I haven't ever done before, where I really felt on my heart I needed to be talking about the significant danger American Jews are facing. Maybe I didn't do it in the smartest way, but I did share my heart with a lot of Jewish communities, and it was quite dramatic and very intense. And I just got an email saying, wow, I have to say, I doubted you when you were speaking last year about the imminent wide-scale attacks against Jews coming soon to the U.S. I'm sad to see you were correct. Hard to believe. You know, that's like, that's just one person. I've heard this a number of other times because I've been relatively vocal about my feeling that things are not going to be safe for Jews in America. I'm not going to pretend I'm a prophet that knows this for sure, how it's going
to
happen, but I feel
pretty... don't think you need to be a prophet. The writing is on the wall. All it takes is a little bit of instability.
I'm not saying I'm not a prophet.
No, to me, as soon as you and I experienced Hurricane Rita, I said Jews are not safe in this country anymore, because it could come from a natural disaster. It could come from a military disaster. It could come from a financial crisis. It could come from a leader. It could come from so many different directions. But any little bit of instability makes Jews not safe. There's an exodus of Jews leaving Brazil now, an exodus of Jews leaving France now. Every single country, the Jews are leaving. What, America is going to be the one country that's different out of our 2,000 years of history? There's never been a country in our history that we have been safe and secure in for more than a couple of generations, four generations. Folks, the writing is on the wall. In fact, I made this video. It's on our YouTube channel now. You guys should check that out. It's on our Facebook page. And I targeted specifically the J Street Associated Jews, the college students.
College students in specific. It was a very good message.
J Street nonsense, two-state solution, suicidal nonsense. Check this out, guys.
J Street is probably the most dangerous Jewish organization in the world today, as far as poisoning Jewish youth against Israel and against their own people. And I heard they had a massive conference, and at the same time, I'm getting all these news flashes that anti-Semitism is on the rise in Europe, and anti-Semitism is on the rise in America. Cemeteries are being vandalized. And I'm just putting one and one together. And here's what happens. These J Street Jews are saying, two-state solution, two-state solution, make Israel weaker, make Israel weaker, make Israel have indefensible borders. We don't even care if Israel's destroyed, from the river to the sea. That's like a lot of the chants now. Palestine will be free from the river to the sea, it's all of Israel, we don't care, kill Israel now.
Long live the Intifada!
The that's what J Street is doing. And the two-state solution, which will ultimately destroy Israel, at the same time, there's anti-Semitism on the rise. And see, these J Street Jews, they're having an identity crisis. They're in college for the first time. Who are they? Are they Jews? Are they Americans? Are they Democrats? Are they vegan? Who are these kids? They're finding that they're discovering themselves out. And J Street is feeding them this poison. Make Israel weaker. You're not really with Israel. You're American. You're a Democrat. The real battle here is about Trump. The real battle here is about America. You're not really Israel. Oh, Israel, that's two-state solution. Make Israel weaker. That's our thing. We make Israel weaker. And at the same time, anti-Semitism is on the rise. And do you think those anti-Semites cared if you voted J Street or if you voted AIPAC or if you're a Republican or a Democrat? Do you think any of them care? You're a Jew. And nothing's going to change that. And every country that we've ever been in for the last 2,000 years has only been safe for a certain amount of time. And you, J Street boys and girls, what if, just what if, Donald Trump does something that creates some sort of instability, and all of a sudden now, Jews don't feel as safe in America anymore. You see it on the rise. Cemeteries are being vandalized. You are making your own bed, because the only place that you'll have to flee is your homeland. The only place you'll be safe is Israel. And as your only safe haven, you're making your only safe place weak when you advocate the two-state solution, and you're making our borders indefensible, and you're strengthening the Hamas and ISIS and all the rest of the jihad that want to kill Jews. And so don't make your own homeland weak. Think you're a Jew.
To me, that's the bottom line. These Jews need to wake up to know that they're Jews. And what I would like all of our listeners to do, go to our YouTube page and share that video. I mean, our demographic isn't yet hitting exactly the college Jewish student. So if you know kids that are in college, that are on campuses, it would really help us spread the message. Go to our YouTube channel, go to our Facebook page, and share it with your friends and family that happen to be in college now. Every Jewish college student needs to wake up to that reality that they're Jews first.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, there are a lot of people are coming up and saying, you know, Trump, if he really isn't anti-Semitic, then why isn't he going and just doing the layup that any president would do and condemn these attacks against Jewish cemeteries and Jews in America and the rising anti-Semitism. And, you know, there's this reporter. Actually, I want to play what happened with this reporter that stood up to ask a question.
Are you a friendly reporter?
I'm friendly.
Watch how friendly he is. Go ahead.
I've been good to you the entire campaign, Mr. President.
Go ahead.
So, first of all, my name is Jake Turks from Ami Magazine, and I, despite what some of my colleagues may have been reporting, I haven't seen anybody in my community accuse either yourself or any of anyone on your staff of being anti-Semitic. We understand that you have Jewish grandchildren, you are their Zaidi. However, what we are concerned about, and what we haven't really heard being addressed, is an uptick in anti-Semitism and how the government is planning to take care of it. There's been a report out that 48 bomb threats have been made against Jewish centers all across the country in the last couple of weeks. There are people who are committing anti-Semitic acts or threatening to.
You see, he said he's going to ask a very simple, easy question. And it's not.
It's an important
question. It's not. Not a simple question. Not a fair question. Okay, sit down. I understand the rest of the question. So here's the story. Number one, I am the least anti-Semitic person that you've ever seen in your entire life. Number two, racism, the least racist person. In fact, we did very well relative to other people running as a Republican.
Quiet.
See, he lied about he was going to get up and ask a very straight, simple question. So, you know, so welcome to the world of the media. But let me just tell you something, that I hate the charge. I find it repulsive. I hate even the question, because people that know me, and you heard the Prime Minister, you heard Netanyahu yesterday. Did you hear him, Bibi? He said, I've known Donald Trump for a long time. And then he said, forget it. So you should take that instead of having to get up and ask a very insulting question. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm Lisa from the PBS.
See, it just shows you about the press, but that's the way the press is.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Good. Right. So it would be a layup. It's a layup. Just condemn it. And why isn't he condemning it? And reporters asked, and this ultra-Orthodox reporter asked, and he shouted him down and misunderstood him. And people are saying, why isn't he speaking up? Well, he did open up his first, it wasn't a State of the Union address, but it was an address to Congress, and it was very State of the Union-esque. And this is how he opened it up.
Tonight, as we mark the conclusion of our celebration of Black History Month, we are reminded of our nation's path toward civil rights and the work that still remains to be done. Recent threats targeting Jewish community centers and vandalism of Jewish cemeteries, as well as last week's shooting in Kansas City, remind us that while we may be a nation divided on policies, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its very ugly forms.
You know, to me, he sounds presidential. It's like shocking to me.
Well, I'm a little bit more tapped into the general media pulse of America than you are. I you know, like to see CNN and Fox and BBC and what they're saying about it. And really, there's been a very wide shock. People are saying that he sounded normal. And, you know, I think on some, for some level, he set the bar a little bit low as far as expectations of normalcy are concerned in a lot of the general population's mind, people that are influenced by the general media. I think a lot of people were really impressed.
Were you telling me this story about some Jewish Democrat, maybe even a family member of yours, that heard that the vice president was going? Can you tell that story? People need to, like, there's something, they have some sort of juke in their head that Republicans are anti-Semites and they're evil.
I actually don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, you don't know what I'm talking about. I thought you told me this story. Here's the story that I heard, that someone has a Jewish cousin, Democrat, liberal, blah, 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 in America, and they were in the airport and they saw or heard that Vice President Mike Pence had just come back from restoring with his own hands one of the cemeteries as sort of a declaration that he stands with the Jewish people.
I mean, this was nationwide news.
Nationwide news. And they were somehow going to, like, either be on the plane with them, see them in the airport. Somehow their paths were going to cross. And then her mission that she put out on Facebook was like, what should I rip this guy a new one? I should sell him something. I'm going to go. And, like, what? For bending down on his hands and knees and fixing a Jewish cemetery, like,
which is
somehow,
more than she did.
Yeah, somehow, like, they were trying to find how that was anti-Semitic. And I feel like this nonsense of the Republican Party being anti-Jewish, I mean, eventually the truth is just going to get out. The truth will be exposed, that this lie that's been just pulsating throughout the Jewish world, that Republicans are anti-Jewish, Republicans are anti-Jewish, eventually the Jews are going to be like, oh, they're not anti-Jewish. It's, like, so obvious that they're not.
Right. And by the way, I just want to say why I think that you and I both deviate away from saying anti-Semitic, because I've gotten feedback, and so have you, I'm sure, that anti-Semitic, the Arabs are Semites also. Let's just call it what it is.
Jew hatred,
right. Anti-Jewish. That's what it is. And listen, there are a lot of Republicans who are, and there's also Democrats who are. And, you know, the enemy of your enemy is not necessarily your friend. There needs to be a more nuanced understanding of what's happening. And I think to say that Trump is a Jew hater is really, really, really missing the point. I think he is he has narcissistic personality disorder. He has definitely some serious personality disorders. Just, you know, this ultra-Orthodox guy that asked him a question, and it was such a good question. Nobody thinks that you're a Jew hater at all. But you know, let me just ask. He said, however, let me ask, what are you doing? And I know the way Trump's mind works a little bit, and it was the however. The moment the guy said, however, then Trump's like, oh, he's going to attack me. He's attacking me. Sit down. You're a liar.
He's just been burned by the media so many times. He's been taken out of context so many times. They've did everything they could to rip this guy apart. And so he doesn't trust the media anymore. And rightfully so. How many times has the media done lies about us? I mean, it's like they have a specific agenda and he's now defensive because the media is against him.
Okay. But at the same time, this guy, it was so well-meaning.
Right. It was a mistake.
And he even said this guy defended him afterwards. And he's like, I really am impressed that the president President Trump is so reviled by such an accusation that he got that defensive about it. It shows how much of an anti-Semite he is not.
Yeah. Well, so here's what really like gets my goose. That these like, you know, secular liberal Jews are like, we want a two-state solution. Why? Because we are pro-peace. We are pro-human rights. We are pro-Palestinian. We are so pro and we're so progressive that we love all these things. I'm like, come on. They're just liars. What human rights will be in this quote-unquote Palestinian state? What will the women's rights be in this Palestinian state? What about the children's rights? What about, oh, no, let's not even go to the gay and transgender rights that they love so much. You know, transgenders were just mutilated and killed in Saudi Arabia now, as if a Palestinian state wouldn't just be another jihad nest of everything that is against human rights. So what are they talking about? There's just like a big fat lie. Facebook, which is not a political organization, they're a company. They want to make money. Anytime they have to shut down a page, they lose money. They don't want to shut down anyone's pages. Did you hear that Facebook shut down the Palestinian Authority's official Facebook page?
Do you know how much pressure it took to get them to do that?
But do you know what Facebook had to do?
The level of incitement that there needed to be on that page needed to be so overwhelming.
Facebook was like, we just cannot allow that on our network. It is, they are calling for the death of Jews. They're inciting to hatred. They're inciting to violence. People will be killed and will die because of Facebook. And Facebook did the responsible thing and shut down the Palestinian Authority's Facebook page. And these are the people that we're going to make quote unquote peace with. These are the people that are going to protect human rights. It's all a scam. If you're for the two-state solution, you're against human rights. And there's no way around it.
Anyways, and that's what we're about. We're talking, you know, I got a lot of feedback, Jeremy, about our debate that we had. I'd like to have more of those debates with you, because if there's any difference between us, it is that you tend to be a little bit more practical and pragmatic about accomplishing very good goals.
Wise, intelligent, thought out.
Okay, yeah. Make the Sinai the Jewish state. Why don't we surrender to Iran? I would love to do a montage of the insanity that's come out of you over the years. But
Sinai as the Palestinian state, that's the best idea that this radio show has ever produced.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it this radio show. You on this radio show. But anyways, we'd love to continue hearing from all of you. You could reach out, Ari@thelandofisrael.com, Jeremy@thelandofisrael.com. We love to hear from you. And also, listen, when you have your groups coming to Israel, or you know someone who's going to Israel, tell them to reach out to us. Come out and see the magic, the intoxicating enchantment of what is happening in the hills of Judea right now.
We are literally batting 100%. Every person that has come to our headquarters on their trip in Israel marks our headquarters as the highlight of their trip. I've yet to hear anyone say that it wasn't the highlight. They went to the Kotel. They went to the City of David. They went to Shiloh. They went to Hebron. They went to here. They went to all of Israel. The highlight of all of their trips was actually everyone. I mean, it's like an unbelievable thing.
I don't have
thing.
One friend who's and come I'll, out and said that it wasn't the highlight. And if they did say it, then they're not my friend.
No, but I'll tell you what it is. So much of Israel is about visiting the past. And what we are building is the ancient ruins and history of Israel coming to life. And if you want to be a part of it, then you have to come there, plant a tree, put down a brick, help us build it. And if you can't come to Israel yet, right on the top right of our website is a donate page. Everything takes money. And I'll advise that we had more, but Ari and I have given everything we got.
Everything we have, and we've really jumped in the deep end on this. And let me tell you, we're starting to realize more and more.
I've made some phone calls to people, and I've made some big asks, and from out of the woodwork, Hashem has called the right people at the right time, and some people have given a lot, and some people have given a little, but every little bit helps, and you are helping us take this
especially
Torah.
Big little bits.
But you're helping us take this Torah from Zion to the world. You're helping us build this headquarters that's changing people's lives. You're strengthening our stronghold in Judea. And you should be blessed for it. Folks, Ari and Jeremy signing out. Shalom.
Hello, my name is Tommy Waller. I'm the founder and president of HaYovel. More than 12 years ago, I made my first trip to the land of Israel. What I saw and heard changed my life forever. I stood with Nir Levi, an Orthodox Jewish man in his vineyard in Samaria on the Mountain of Blessing. There, he opened his Bible and read the prophecy of Jeremiah that said, "You shall yet plant vineyards on the mountains of Samaria." We have the opportunity to join Israel as it celebrates the 50th year of the liberation of Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria. Come join us as we witness the unveiling of prophecy in the Jubilee year. Come be a part of the biblical narrative. Go to hayovel.com, that's HAYOVEL.com, to find out more. And I hope to see you there.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is at Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments. Check out their website, www.windowsofjerusalem.com. They've got beautiful 1, 2, 3, 4-bedroom apartments in the best location in the city center. The view, the location, plus the wonderful staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com.